The legal community is absorbing last month's Supreme Court decision on life sentences for America's juvenile offenders. As we've talked about on the show, Michigan has had a particularly high number of offenders incarcerated under those terms. The state is also in an unusual position because a class of those juvenile offenders sued the state for dragging out a mandatory reexamination of their life sentences. Michigan's Attorney General Dana Nessel joins us now to talk about the process and what this latest Supreme Court opinion might mean for it. Dana Nessel, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks a lot for having me.
When the ruling came down, did you have any immediate concerns for what this might mean for those defendants serving juvenile life sentences in Michigan?
Well, let's start with the fact that I virtually always have concerns when any ruling comes down from the Supreme Court nowadays. But that being the case, you know, as much as this decision seemed to sort of contrast where we had been heading as a country and as a society when it came to sentencing children that were convicted of crimes, I don't think that it necessarily changes that much in terms of where we're at in the state of Michigan, because the Supreme Court's decision in Jones is really a confirmation of the status quo here in Michigan, because the decision really affirmed the legal analysis that the Michigan Supreme Court adopted in Skinner and Hyatt a few years ago. So it doesn't really change the status of juvenile lifers who are working for parole. So if I could just give you some of the numbers that we're working on right now.
Please do.
So there were 374 class members who comprised the total universe of juvenile lifers at the time of the Miller and the Montgomery decisions back in 2012. Now, for those 374 juvenile lifers, 234 have already been resentenced, and 137 remain pending because three of the class members died before resentencing. So of these sentences that have been imposed, of the 234 individuals who have been resentenced, 218 have received a term of year sentence, so that's 93%. Only 16 have received life without parole sentences, and that's 7%. But I think it's important to keep in mind that the vast majority of these cases were the ones where the prosecutors did not seek a life without parole sentences. They were okay with a term of years. And so for the 137 that are remaining, they really represent the most serious offenders, since the majority remaining are the ones that the prosecutors sought a life sentence in the first place. So I don't know that it really changes anything substantially, but I will say, obviously, going forward, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these cases play out, although since we've had virtually no court hearings of this type in the last year because of COVID, I expect it to be a slow process.
Yeah. And just to contrast what's going on in Michigan for other states, Justice Sotomayor noted in her dissent that in some other states that have been reexamining the cases of juvenile lifers, for example, Louisiana resentenced 57% of its juvenile life cases right back into life without parole. This maybe tells us a bit about how the wheels of justice in Michigan were changing even before the Supreme Court made this latest ruling. But it's, you know, when you're talking about 374 cases and 16 sentenced back to life without parole, that's a considerably smaller figure. Your predecessor, Bill Schuette, stood out in the nation as an attorney general who was unwilling to revisit juvenile life sentences after the 2016 Supreme Court Miller opinion that sort of changed the game, proclaiming that these sentences were cruel and unusual. What do you see the role of the attorney general being in overseeing this process? I mean, it's judges who really make the decisions, right?
That's true. And when you say, what is the role of the attorney general, you know, the 83 county prosecutors, I think, would tell you that the attorney general really shouldn't be playing much of a role at all, right? These are duly elected prosecutors in their counties. And generally speaking, they want to be the ones to make these decisions in the cases that they oversaw. Now, there was a claim to the contrary of that in a case called Hill that was resolved recently, where really the claim was that the attorney general sort of oversees all the other county prosecutors and can tell them what to do. Obviously, the county prosecutors don't like that much. And it's been, you know, my perspective in terms of the cases that we've handled, I subscribe to the notion that it should only be in rare cases where the crime truly reflects irreparable corruption on the part of the individual that we sentence life without parole. But I will say, you know, I worked for many years as a prosecutor, assistant prosecutor in Wayne County, and I handled cases involving juveniles who committed homicides, but I also defended them as a defense attorney. And moreover, I handled cases that were before the parole board for individuals who had been convicted of homicides maybe when they were 18 and now they're in their 60s. So I had this sort of unique opportunity to see the legal system at both ends. And I guess the conclusion that I came to was seeing some of these, you know, 60, 65, 70, 75-year-olds that had been in prison for so many years, it was just very rare to find a person that after that many years in prison, I felt was a threat to society in the event that they were paroled. And those numbers are really borne out by the fact that for all of these juvenile lifers who got resentenced and were paroled, I think there's only one of those many individuals that ended up violating their parole at all, and I think it was on a technical matter. So I guess the real question that we have to resolve is, when we are sentencing these youthful offenders, are we sentencing them in a way that it's meant to reflect rehabilitation, or is this meant to be punitive in nature? Are we trying to exact vengeance? Because if it's not about vengeance, and it's just about making sure somebody is rehabilitated, it's really hard to argue that a sentence of a minimum between 25 to 40 years and a maximum of 60 years, that if you're going to serve a 60-year sentence, that you're still going to be a threat to society after you've been incarcerated for 60 years, and you are almost definitely going to be, you know, 75, 76, 70, you know, years old or so. I mean, it's hard to find an example of somebody at that age that still continues to be a threat to society after that many years incarcerated.
What's going on with the men and women who are still incarcerated in that delayed cohort of people awaiting resentencing? I think you said there are 137 right now.
Yeah, well, as part of the disposition of the Hill case, you know, there had to be a determination made by these county prosecutors one way or the other if they were going to seek life without parole or they were going to be okay with a term of years and there was going to be a resentencing based on that. And I know we've had a lot of changes. Like, so for instance, we have a new prosecutor now in Oakland County. A lot of those cases came from Oakland County when Jessica Cooper was the prosecuting attorney there. She had decided, I think, in the vast majority of those cases that she wanted to seek life without parole. And, you know, she lost in her primary to Karen McDonald. Karen McDonald has now reviewed those cases. And I think in all but a handful, she has decided that she's okay with a term of years. So obviously those numbers are, you know, consistently changing. But for the cases where there's been a decision made to seek a life without parole sentence, again, there has to be this hearing conducted where there are a number of factors still, you know, the Miller factors that have to be considered. And, you know, people are waiting for those hearings to take place because, frankly, no one's having any trials at all and haven't had any trials at all in many counties in over a year. So we were already in this position where we had this massive delay and we were waiting for a number of cases to make their way through the state courts, even, till we could get to the point of even knowing, you know, who had the burden of proof. Is this a determination made by a jury or by a judge? There were all these questions that had to be decided. So there were a number of delays. And now we're going to have even further delays, but I don't know how that can be helped because obviously you had a problem presenting these cases due to the COVID pandemic.
The people who are waiting for their resentencing hearings, do you think it would be wise for them to hold out hope for a different outcome with the Supreme Court saying one thing in Miller 5 years ago and Montgomery after that, and now something quite different this spring?
Oh, I think that for a lot of these individuals, I think there will be a different outcome. And I think if for no other reason, I think there's a different mentality just amongst judges in the state. And also you have the benefit of hindsight. So for a lot of these individuals, you know, you might have seen what was a horrific set of circumstances at the time when the crime was committed, when this person was 15 or 16 or 17 years old. But now that you're seeing this person in front of you during the new hearing, and it's, you know, 20, 30, 40 years later, and you have now the benefit to see what that person has done when they've been incarcerated for all those years. And for some of those individuals, if they have gone decades without a disciplinary ticket, if they've gone on and received an education, maybe they're involved even in terms of assisting other prisoners with you know, anger management or, you know, drug rehabilitation or teaching, you know, various different classes, I think that a judge is going to look at that type of person much differently than that person would have been evaluated at the time they committed the offense so many decades earlier. So when you are assessing, is this person a threat to society? You might have thought one thing when the crime was committed, and you might think something very different all these years later. You know, it's unfortunate that there's been this kind of delay, but I will say I have a different perspective of it now as Attorney General than I did before I got into office, because I actually understand why some of these delays have taken place. You should know, I mean, I've talked to so many of the prosecutors and defense attorneys around the state, and what people don't understand is that, you know, how do you put together a file? Like, a lot of these files are missing. They can't even find the files. And so for the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, just putting this case together after years and years and years and years has proven to be incredibly difficult. And so a lot of these delays, it sounds like it's, you know, oh, this is, you know, like the courts aren't being cooperative or the prosecutors aren't being cooperative. More times than not, it's defense counsel, because it's just so hard to put together the best possible case, and you only get one chance. You want to put together the best case possible.
Dana Nessel is Attorney General of the State of Michigan. Dana, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.